Welcome to You, Me, Empathy. Thank you for listening. We would like to remind you that this podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only, and is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Known as just a silly boy with a feely heart. Please consider supporting the show. Check us out on Patreon or simply leave a review on iTunes. Here's your host and creator of the show, Known Wells.
Hello, feely humans. Welcome to another episode of You, Me, Empathy. My name is Noni Shorts. How are ya? Today, in episode 82, I chat with my guest, Mel Dussault. We chat about shame and self-worth and fear of abandonment. It's a great episode. Mel is a wonderful human. You can find her online at thebeardlesscoffee.com and at thebeardlesscoffee on Instagram. Before we get to the episode today, I just wanted to say thank you to some people who commented on my recent post. In this post, I shared a little bit, I'll just read it. I said, when I was in the throes of my anorexia, I wanted to disappear. Today, recovered, I want to face the world, heart open. And, that's just how I exist now. It's hard to do that, to be sort of heart open to the world, and it's vulnerable, and it's difficult at times, and there's lots of bumps along the road, but it's so, so very worth it. And I wouldn't be here today if I didn't find that path. And I just wanted to thank those who commented on that Instagram post. And I'm just going to share usernames. So thank you to @Vanna_writes. Thank you to @Rebecca McAllister. Thank you to @JYOTIWAN. I don't know how to pronounce that. I know that's just, sorry. I love you. Thank you for the hearts. Thank you to @Cartmill_Angela. Thank you to @MindfulFermentation. I love that screen username. Thank you to @SnippetsOfSnapdragon. Thank you to @Drunken_Pottery. That's DRUNKN_pottery. Thank you to @JulieWicks. Thank you to @Sun_Wave1986. And thank you to @ReleaseBulimia. You all shared very thoughtful comments, and I hope that post made you feel a little less alone in the world. Okay, before we get to the episode, please leave a review and a rating for You, Me, Empathy in iTunes. It takes a couple minutes. It's easy to do. It also makes my day and fills my heart. Why won't you just be nice to me? Do that for me, huh? Please? Pretty please? Pretty please with the cherry on top. I'm just begging now. I'm just kidding. But if you do that, that would be wonderful. I love you forever. And follow the show on Instagram and Twitter @YouMeEmpathy. And remember, feely humans, to lead with your big, beating, feely heart, because I know it's in there, you know it's in there, and it's a beautiful thing. So, without further ado, this is episode 82. That rhymed. I liked that. 82, about shame, self-worth, and fear of abandonment, with Mel Dussault. Welcome to You, Me, Empathy, a podcast about exploring the struggles we face in our day-to-day lives as humans trying to get by on this wondrous and overwhelming pale blue dot. The intent of You, Me, Empathy is to talk openly, without judgment, about our neuroses, our mental illnesses, our shared anxieties and worries, to create a dialogue that is vulnerable and deeply human and empathetic, and to share that dialogue with others to inspire emotional and cognitive collaboration and insight so we can, hand in hand, break down the stigma that make us feel shame and guilt for struggling, for feeling our feelings, for being human. Yumi Empathy is a safe, friendly space designed to inspire the beauty in each of us. Today, I'm romping around the empathy forest with vulnerability embracer, fierce creator, and very caffeinated writer, Mel Dusso. Hello, Mel.
Hi.
Did I get your last name right there?
You did.
Okay, great. Excellent. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just got back from breakfast with my friends. We do it every Sunday.
That's a nice tradition. How long have you been doing that?
A little over a year. It's actually, as far as traditions go, it's probably one of the only ones that I've been able to keep up with.
It's hard to keep up with traditions.
It is, especially we have a group of 8 friends and, you know, we don't always make it, but for the most part, there's always at least 4 of us there. So it's just a really nice way to keep up with everyone during our busy lives.
Yeah, no, that's nice. Yeah, my wife and I had, it's been probably 6 months since we've met, but we've had a book club for, I don't know, I would say like 5-6 years.
Nice.
But, you know, we recently bought a house and the move and you know, the holidays, it's, it's been hard to get back to the book club. But yeah, I like that sort of tradition of meeting up with, especially when they're friends that you don't, they live in a different city and you don't get to see too often, you know,
right.
I love that.
We all have families, you know, we all have jobs and just life. And so it's just nice to be able to get together every Sunday for an hour or two and kind of the guys will talk about their stuff. And then every now and then, you know, we'll chime in and we'll talk about life.
Yeah, I love it. Well, happy to have you here. Today, we're just going to get to know each other a bit. Before we do that, though, we always start the show with a little emotional check-in. So how are you feeling in this moment? How has your week been? How are you feeling today, just overall?
This week's been a good one. I think, so a little bit before this week, I was going through a pretty, I wouldn't want to say rough depression, but it was almost a confusing depression. I didn't really know why I was feeling depressed. I couldn't kind of pin down what it was. But I just kind of went through the motions, I coped. And this last week I felt a lot of joy. I felt a lot of excitement and enthusiasm and moving forward. So right now I'm really good.
That's good. Well, first of all, I mean, so much relate to the idea of like feeling a thing and not knowing where it came from or why it's happening.
Yeah. You know, I think that's a big part of depression is, and, you know, once I started to, you know, talk to a therapist, and I personally take medication for it, I take sertraline. So once I started to kind of cope in those ways, I started to realize that sometimes if I can kind of pinpoint what triggered my depression, it can help kind of speed up the cycle. And so when I can't pinpoint it, it's a little scarier.
Yeah.
So just kind of, you know, reminding my husband, hey, I'm going through this. I don't exactly know why, but I know I'm going through it. So, you know, just being open about it has really helped me and it's made me not feel like overwhelmed by myself.
That's nice. And it's great to hear that you have that open dialogue with your partner and just kind of, you know, giving them a heads up like, hey, going through this. It might, you know, it means this for our relationship and, you know, it's nice that he's sort of accepting and, you know, loving in that space.
Yeah, he definitely is. And I know it's not, you know, we've been through all of the ups and downs of me trying to identify with my own mental illness. So I've definitely seen how it affects him. And I try to stay mindful of that while also going through my own feelings about how I feel.
Yeah. Well, I do want to dive into that deeply. I just wanted to give a little sort of emotional check-in for myself. Last night I went to, so listeners know Jordana She was a guest on episode 10 of You Me Empathy, and she lives in LA, and I had her on episode 10, and then I had her on the You Me Empathy 1 year anniversary sort of episodes. And, you know, so we've been sort of internet buddies for over a year, but we hadn't met in person. And so I, went up to LA. She lives in LA, went up to LA like late afternoon yesterday. And I was nervous, you know, you never know, like, how things are going to go, how you're going to interact right. with a human face to face. And obviously I have the extra sort of added nervousness of being an introvert and sort of that level of anxiety. You know, I just have social anxiety. And so went up there, met up, and we went for like a walk, which was kind of nice. I'm glad we did that. Like, that's like one of the first things we did. I think it would have been maybe a little bit more nerve-wracking for me just to sit,
right?
You know, with her.
Blood flowing, got you kind of just going through the motions.
Exactly, exactly. So we went for a walk, and it was nice. And then we went to like a little dinner party with like a friend she knows, and there was maybe a 10 people there at someone's house. And that was a little nerve-wracking leading up to it, but it actually was good. Like, I like was able to talk with a few different people, and I got to talk about the podcast, and I felt really, I guess, proud of myself for
you should be. Yeah. That's you. A big deal.
Yeah. You know, so like someone who has social anxiety is an introvert. Like, those situations are often very nerve wracking for me. But I knew I wanted to challenge myself because network is a gross word, but I wanted to just
connect
and like tell like strangers, more strangers about the podcast and stuff like that. And okay. You know, while it was on a small scale, I was able to do it, and I feel good about myself.
Yeah. Good for you.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. I think for those of us that are on this journey of trying to talk about mental health openly, you know, I have the idea that even if I talk to one person, and that one person is like, hey, I talked to Mel, and, you know, she's so open, so vulnerable that it made me want to be vulnerable. And even if I just reach the one person, that for me means everything, you know?
Damn right. Yeah. No, that's a really good reminder. You're right. You know, it just takes one person. And the ripple effect of that can be huge.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, no, I love that.
So good for you.
Thank you. Well, let's jump into your story, Mel. Let's start with maybe a couple of seminal moments from your childhood, your young adulthood, but just experiences that maybe stick out in your brain as being pivotal in your life. Good or bad, you know, that kind of speak to maybe who you are today. It could be, you know, again, from your childhood, it could be from sort of like you're growing in your young adulthood, you know, any sort of couple of moments that stick out to you that you want to talk about.
Yeah. So my childhood is a big part of who I am and actually what I do now. I moved out of my mom's house when I was about 5 years old. Up until then, I had kind of a rough back and forth between my mom and my dad. My dad is he has been my entire life a raging alcoholic. And so that was pretty dangerous for us in the beginning. And so we lived with my grandma for the first 5 years. My mom, before I go into anything else, my mom suffers through bipolar depression. And so now that I know this growing up, it kind of helps me kind of understand and cope and heal from the decisions she made that did affect me.
Yeah.
So when I was five, she met my sibling's father and she moved with him. And I didn't want to go with them, apparently. I don't know much about it. but I didn't want to go with them. And so I ended up living with my grandma. And that lasted until I was about 13 years old. And from 5 to 13, you know, my mom had three other children. And so unknowingly, I kind of always wondered why they lived with her and I didn't.
Sure.
it caused a lot of abandonment issues growing up, a lot of confusion of my own identity, of my self-worth. I'm really fortunate enough to have a big family that was willing to help out. So while I lived with my aunt and my grandma, those, 8 years, I think? Eight years. I started to rebel a little bit. I started hanging out with the wrong crowd. I started not, you know, reaching my potential in school and getting really angry, you know, and as a child, I didn't really understand where that came from. I was just angry all the time.
Yeah.
And so my family hasn't always really known exactly how to deal with it. And so I went to live with one aunt when I was 13. And in the span of a year, I lived with five aunts, five different households, five different families that were not my own, you know, neonatal? What is the word?
Nuclear?
Nuclear. That's the word. There you go. my own nuclear family. So I moved from house to house with people that loved me, but I never felt a sense of belonging. I never had a family of my own, in a sense.
Yeah.
So I spiraled out pretty bad in that year of, you know, adolescent hormones. and then my grandpa passed away. And so my grandma and my grandpa were kind of like my parents. And so that was just like such a big change in my life, you know, feeling like I lost a parent, knowing that my other parents were kind of around, but not really around. I ended up going to live with my uncle, and my uncle is kind of like the drill sergeant in my family. and even then I was out there and that's when I moved to Porterville, which is kind of more south. It's 45 minutes away from Bakersfield. So I moved 3 hours away. And I started to really be challenged, you know, I started to really be asked the questions of, well, why are you angry? What's the reason why you're lashing out? And
challenged by people my uncle. In your life?
Mm-hmm. By my uncle. My uncle really got me to understand why I was, or got me to start understanding why I was acting the way that I was acting, mm-hmm. anger wise and, rebelling against authority. And, that's when I went to therapy for probably the first time. And, you know, my entire high school career, I guess, if you can say, I was in sports. I got straight A's. I was involved. And I felt for the first time in my life that I had a real family. And so I thrived for about 5 years. And it's kind of silly when I think about it, but after I graduated high school, you know, I feel like that this is a very common thing that I think most of us experience. After I graduated high school, you know, I went to college straight out of high school on a scholarship, but it was like, what now? Nobody's here. Nobody's, you know, down my throat trying to get me to do my homework. And I was kind of left with my feelings for the first time in a long time. And that was a little disastrous. you know, I made some mistakes in college. I didn't finish. I ended up dropping out because I had a boyfriend back then that was 3 hours away. And the sense of self-worth and abandonment that I had experienced in my early childhood came back, you know, the questions that I was asking myself were like, you know, if I'm not there, I'm not going to be good enough. If I'm not there, then this person's going to leave just like every person leaves.
Yeah.
So, you know, I left college and the relationship itself, you know, I think any relationship that is based off of like those kinds of insecurities, and it was just, I don't think that the relationship itself is relevant to my journey, but it was bad.
I want to take a step back a moment just before we move forward a little bit. Like, I'm okay. Curious about, were you ever, when you did go to move in with your grandparents at the age of five, were you seeing your mom and dad, at, you know, sprinkled in here and there?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's
like, what was that like?
And I think that's a big part of my confusion, you know, is I'm with my parents, my dad, I was my dad's world. I was his only daughter in his life. And I know how much he loved me, but I never lived with him. And I didn't understand back then that he was an alcoholic.
Did he hide it well? Was he violent toward others?
I think my family hid it well from me. I do have a vivid memory of, I don't know what age I was, but I have a vivid memory of waking up in the middle of the night because there was a ruckus out front. And I looked at the front door. My dad was at the front door. And three of my aunts were basically telling him to leave. And I was standing in the hallway. And I don't even think any of them realized I was there. But I heard them. I heard them telling him that he needed to leave because he was drunk and he couldn't take me. And that was kind of the first time that I realized that my dad had some issues.
Mm-hmm.
But when he was with me, he was sober, you know, and I was never really allowed to, they made sure that he was sober when I went with him. And so I didn't see too much. Actually,
it was your grandparents that made sure of that?
My grandparents and my aunts. Mm-hmm. So I have, besides my mom, I have six other aunts and an uncle on my maternal side. On my dad's side, I have seven other uncles and two aunts.
Wow. So a big family.
A big tribe, yeah. So everyone was super, you know, for the most part, I kind of despise the term black sheep. I feel like it's very like outcasting.
Mm.
But both of my parents were kind of, I guess, the black sheep of their family. They were the ones that kind of struggled the most. And so on both sides of my family, my aunts and uncles really did their best to kind of pitch in to help out with me.
Right. It was the causing incident of your parents split the alcoholism?
Yeah, actually, I just found out this year. Just this year, my mom and I really opened up with each other to talk about how our past, you know, because it's not just my past, it's our past, how we felt about it. And I just recently found out that the reason that my parents split up was because I was a newborn and my dad got into an alcoholic rage and threw a lamp at the wall, and some of the glass landed on me as a newborn. And wow. I didn't know this. Yeah. And so my mom, my grandma actually told my mom, if you want to stay, you can stay, but I'm taking her with me because she doesn't deserve this.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That's intense.
Yeah.
Have you talked to your mom about, you know, the reasons for, you know, her leaving you in the care of your grandparents?
Here and there, we've talked about it a lot. You know, as a child, I kind of lashed out a little bit, a lot. and we've
understandably
never,
so.
Right. But we had never sat down to really talk about it. I've always consciously known that she thought she was doing the best. I think from her perspective, she couldn't be the mom she needed to be for me. But I think she didn't understand also that I didn't get that was her mentality of it. So all I saw as a child was that I wasn't good enough to be raised by my mom. I wasn't good enough because my mom had three other kids, yet I was the only one that didn't have a family of my own.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, my heart goes out to you, and it's like breaking a little bit because I have a strong underpinning of feeling like I don't deserve love, and I imagine this scenario, this experience you're having, instilling you this feeling of, yeah, like feeling like an outsider, feeling like, oh, why is mom like in this other house with these other children, and here I am like by myself. Like that's hard.
It was rough, you know, but I think I can't express how grateful I am for the family that I have, because I come from a very long line of strong women, and they help me I don't know if they help me understand it. I think I'd like to take credit of trying to, you know, have perspective on my own, but I really was able to learn from some very strong women to continue to move on, even though it can get hard sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a rough time.
So were you, you know, you mentioned a bit of acting out. What did that look like for you?
So I've always been decently intelligent. I've always gotten pretty good grades. In about seventh grade, I want to say, I started hanging out with, I don't think there's any other way to say it. I started hanging out with, almost like gangbangers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first kind of sense of belonging to like a group of people who I thought really cared about me, in a really long time. So if they ditched school, I ditched school. If they went to, get in a fight with someone, I felt like I had to go with them, because if not, then they were going to leave me too.
Yeah. That was your group. You felt like you were loved and cared for, and you were picking your tribe, because your tribe was taken from you in a way.
Right. And so, so I did a lot of that. I did a lot of, you know, and my teachers all kind of tried to get me back into going to class and doing my work. And I just didn't, I think I was just angry. I was just angry, and I didn't care what anybody else had to say about anything I was doing. I liked it. I was happy, or so I thought. And I didn't want anyone to quote unquote take that from me.
Yeah. So even through this, you were getting good grades?
Oh no, I wasn't even going in school. I wasn't even going to school enough to.
This was in like junior high?
Grades. Yeah, I went.
Gotcha.
So my grandfather passed away when I was 13. So that's in the middle of my eighth grade year. So to put it in perspective, the first half, the first semester of my eighth grade year, I had straight Fs. I literally had straight Fs. I probably missed like 30 periods in a month. And then I moved with my uncle, and I went from straight Fs to straight A's. I was immediately involved with softball and dance. And so my life literally changed completely based off of who I was living with, but also who I was around, because when I moved to Porterville, my uncle set the standards for who he would tolerate me being around.
How was that? How was that hard getting used to?
It really was. And truth be told, even though I'm grateful, because I feel like I benefited a lot from that type of structure, I do see the downside of it. Although I've really done well, or I did well back then, it also left me with a sense of tying my worth to my productivity. Mm. And so I'm super grateful for what my uncle did for me. But I do feel like it's a little controlling, and I definitely want to take some of it without taking all of it in my parenting.
Yeah, that's smart. And during this period of high school where you are, you know, playing softball, you are getting good grades, are you happy? Are you, you know, do you have good friendships? Like what's, are you getting into substances at all? Like these things that high schoolers do?
So in high school, you know, high school is like the best time of my life. I had some of the best memories. I made great friendships. I was in sports year round. I got good grades. I did still, you know, I did still smoke, in high school.
Cigarettes?
No, Pot.
Pot, yeah. All right.
But you know what? I was still angry. Even though I had a great time. I was going to dances and football games and, you know, I didn't really party, to be honest. I didn't party or ditch school that much. If I ditched, it was like I got a hall pass and I was walking around class because I didn't want to stay in the classroom. But I didn't go out to like ditch parties or anything like that.
Was it hard for you to see like friends, you know, having these, to use the word we used earlier, nuclear families around them? Was that difficult? Did you compare?
I don't think I did it consciously, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I think at that point I did feel, even though I still didn't have my nuclear family, being away from seeing them every day kind of helped with not feeling like I was such an outsider. I did feel like I had a nuclear family while I was with my uncle. Mm-hmm. You know, my uncle would literally call me his daughter, and I think that meant so much. My uncle actually walked me down the aisle in November when I got married.
Oh, lovely.
So I did feel a sense of belonging when I was there, and I think that really added to my happiness. I had some deep-rooted issues that still made me angry. I still fought a lot in high school. I lashed out that way.
Physically you fought?
Yeah. I was kind of angry all the time. Mm. The minute I felt like someone was challenging me. But you know, other than that, I had a really good experience in high school.
Yeah. And you know, looking back at that angry high schooler, and I can relate to that. I was pretty angry and, you know, still very sensitive, but, you know, in junior high, high school, I got into a lot of trouble. Looking back at your high school self and that anger that sort of was underpinning your experience, what have you discovered any new insights into, like, what that meant and why that was happening, and how is your anger today?
You know, I consciously, to this day, I'm 28 years old. Last year was the first year that I really took a dive into understanding my childhood and how it affected me and all of that.
It's going to be a lifelong journey.
Yeah. But still to this day, I still struggle with having to take deep breaths because my fuse is still kind of short. I'm definitely better at recognizing it. And I think that makes all the difference for me, is recognizing that if I'm irritable for something that I shouldn't be irritable about, but if I'm irritable about something, it's better for me to talk about it than hold it in and hold on to the resentment and let that build up to anger. Yeah. Personally, my anger is scary to me. So I don't like to experience it. It's extremely exhausting, physically for me and mentally. And so I don't surround myself with people that trigger, I don't want to say stressful people, because I don't discriminate against people that are stressful, I guess. You know, everyone has their thing. But I try not to surround myself with people who embrace aggressive behavior, because it does something to me, and I have to be fair to myself because I don't want to be that person for anybody, including myself. I've really tried to embrace kindness and patience in my life, and that's gone a really long way for me.
That's a good thing to embrace. Yeah. You know, when it comes to anger, like, I was going to ask, like, what specifically triggers you? You know, you mentioned sort of aggressive people. What does that mean to you?
I think, and I just discovered this, you are asking amazing questions, because these are all things that have just been in my psyche. when I feel like people are trying to make me feel crappy about myself, and, you know, some people do it thinking that they're encouraging me or not enabling me, but that's just not the way I receive it. And so when I feel like there's somebody that's trying, that not is trying to, but that is actually adding to the shame that I've felt for so long, I get angry. I get really angry. Like, how dare you try to make me feel worse about myself than I already feel, you know?
Hmm. Can you give me an example of an experience you've had where you've felt that anger and that adding to the shame?
I am, and it's going to be kind of a funny one.
Okay.
So I've had a really hard time with body image for the past decade. And so I'm constantly trying to work on healthy eating habits and exercising, and also having a healthy balance, understanding that I can enjoy myself and eat something that's not the best every now and then. And so not too long ago, I wanted to have Pop-Tarts.
Classic.
And I asked my husband to pop in two tarts for me.
Pop a couple of tarts in for me, hubby.
And his response was, nobody needs two Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
So I was triggered, you know, instead of telling me like, you know, is it okay that you're having two Pop-Tarts? Are those in accordance with your goals? It made me feel so guilty.
Yeah.
And ashamed and disgusted with myself immediately. And I think that was the root of why I got upset.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, you know, I mean, that makes complete sense to me. That would anger me if your husband told me that. Because no one likes to, I think there is a better way for him to say it. Right.
Right. Right. And you that's because I'm an extremely open person. I'm not, I don't beat around the bush with people. I don't lie because I feel like it's going to make them feel better. But I also, because I've grown, I used to be kind of a blunt, for lack of a better word, a blunt a-hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just realized that, you know, you can be honest without being a jerk.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's just kind of what it is, you know, is I'm completely honest and I don't say things. I say things that people don't always want to hear, but I feel like I do it in a way that doesn't make them feel worse about themselves.
Totally.
Because I know it feels
totally.
Like.
Yeah. I think it's very easy to ride this like, oh, I'm honest and that is intrinsically valuable. And
right.
I think that's true in a sense, but I think the component, which you're talking about, Mel, that's very important is how you say it and who you're saying it to,
right.
The language you're using, the tone you're using, all these things take time to figure out, but like, it's so important.
Right. And that's another, you know, that's another thing that I try and not so much teach people. I'm not a teacher, but, even I feel, if I feel like I'm saying something the right way and the person that I'm speaking to still gets hurt by what I say, that matters to me.
Yeah.
I'm not sit there and say, well, you know, well, I said it this way, so this is how you should feel. No, because that's not, at the end of the day, what I care about the most is that someone that I care about was hurt by something I said or some way I said it.
Mm. And there aren't any shoulds, you know,
right.
Or should nots. Like, I think what helps me in my mental health is recognizing that, yes, I'm not alone, but I also experience things differently than everyone else, right?
Right.
And that's an important distinction because there's no blanket cure or blanket sort of washing of certain experiences. And, you know, recognizing that my experiences as a child, you know, were real to me and contributed to my identity. And even if my siblings, for instance, like, you know, had different experiences, you know, I think it's important to make those distinctions.
Right.
I mean, it's empowering, right? I think like when someone says something that makes us feel like, you know, there's no choice or, you know, free will or whatever, like there's, like a washing of, you know, it just takes away our power. And I think that's not right.
Right.
So you mentioned a moment ago, like that experience, you know, in your experience when you deal with aggressive people or when your monster of a husband wants to, just give you one Pop-Tart, for instance. you mentioned shame. What is the shame about? What do you think that is couched in? Are you still unpacking that?
Just, you know, I kind of am still unpacking it because I know, I consciously know that the, like, how my childhood worked out isn't my fault. But I think as a child with abandonment issues, I think a lot of us always feel like it's our fault. I don't know if you know the story with my daughter. My daughter's also not my biological daughter.
Okay.
Her birth mom lives in Wisconsin, and she's never known, until this year, she had never met her. And just last year, it broke my heart to hear her verbalize. I was actually really proud of her that she was able to, but she verbalized, "Why doesn't she want me? What did I do?" Mm-hmm. And I just could not get that out of my heart and my head for probably a month, because I know exactly what that feels like. And so the shame that comes from not having your parents around, and I think for me, the shame of feeling like I wasn't good enough to help my dad in his situation. And as an adult, I completely know that that was a battle. That was an internal battle for him. But I think I've always been someone that wants to fix things for people and always wants to find solutions. So knowing that I couldn't help my dad through his struggles, even as an adult, has always been pretty heavy on my heart.
Yeah. Yeah, I relate to that deeply. You know, oh, shoot, I lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
No, it's not your fault. It's my scatterbrain. It'll come back to me. It'll come back to me. It will, maybe it won't, but that's okay. I'm not going to be self-shaming.
So actually, I wanted to touch up on what we were talking about with aggression.
Yeah.
So I did actually move back in with my mom when I was 16 years old. And at that point, I had already had 16 years of resentment built up. And so that was really... We ended up getting into a lot of arguments. My mom, like I said earlier, suffers through bipolar depression that I had not had to deal with or experience for 16 years while my other siblings did. So when she was going through her depression spells or when she had a mood swing, they knew to kind of step back and out of her way, whereas I was full of a bunch of reasons why I wanted to fight with the woman.
Yeah.
And so we got into physical fights, and there was a time where my mom hit me with the belt and left welts all over my legs. Now as the person that I was in high school, I wore a skirt the next day so that she never did that again. Mm-hmm. but I think that's where a lot of the, you know, if someone's really aggressive, has aggressive behavior, it's triggering because I feel like I have to defend myself.
Yeah.
I'm flirting with 5 feet over here, and I've normally been pretty small. And so I've, you know, growing up, people kind of didn't take me seriously because of that.
And a bit of a chip on your shoulder.
Right.
Well, I mean, and you know, when you're dealing with someone, so was your mom medicated?
Off and on. I don't think she ever, so My hypothesis about my mom is that she grew up in a time where not only was mental illness not understood, but it was actually frowned upon. You know, she grew up in a time where people were like, you know, back in my day, we didn't have time to be depressed. And so she was never taught how to be okay with the fact that she had to take pills every day.
Yeah.
I think she would try to get off of her medication sometimes, which, you know, if... I don't know if you take medication or not, but
I do. That's, yeah.
So as you know, that can be really dangerous. You know, the withdrawals from getting off of medication are just awful.
Yeah. I remember I take Vibrid for my clinical depression, and I remember missing a day because as I mentioned before, I'm a scatterbrain. And the next day I was feeling like, I didn't realize that I had missed, and I was feeling like this, like, I felt so awful. Like I felt like immediately the world was caving in on me, like my stomach hurt, and I was just like, oh yeah, I forgot my medication.
And you don't realize it until you forget the medication, you experience that withdrawal, how serious it is. You know, when I started going on my medication, and they stressed, do not miss a dose, do not take two doses. I don't want to say I didn't take them seriously, but I didn't realize how serious it was until I missed that dose.
What do you have? I'm still working on the strategy myself, because do you have a strategy to help you remember? Do you use like a pill case? What works for you?
I use a pill case. I am currently not even using the pill case. So it's not necessary. I'm still trying to figure out how to do it myself. I have a timer on my phone, which also doesn't always work. For me, it's purely fear. Fear of not taking my pill. So if I don't take my pill at the end of the day and I realize it, I take it. It's kind of just whenever I'm around my pills, I'm like, oh, hey, I didn't take my pill today.
Yeah.
But which is also dangerous because sometimes I don't know if I already did. I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah. I need to be better about it myself because it's just like by my bedside table. I take it at night, and obviously I've forgotten, and I think I'm just going to buy a cheap pill case, and that'll be that. That'll be easier. But
yeah, I have one of those. During the wedding planning process, I don't know how many doses I missed, and I don't know why I haven't gone back to the case, but it's there.
I do remember what I was trying to get at before.
Yay.
So, so you have an adopted child, is that correct?
I do. My ex, my children are not my husband's children. Mm-hmm. I had a son with my ex, and when I came back into his life, he had Alexa, which is my daughter. And I raised her since she was one. And then when we split up, when the kids were about 2 and 5, we made an arrangement where I get both of my kids Monday through Friday, and they both go with him Saturday, Sunday.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah.
So what, when your daughter did come to you and sort of express this anxiety around, like, why doesn't she want me? Those sorts of things. Like, how did that make you feel? Like, what did you say?
I tried to get her to understand. It's not that she wasn't wanted, because I know for a fact that she does want her. It was really hard. I can't even remember what I said, to be honest with you. It's been a while, but
sure.
I do my best to not feed that into her. If she wants to get to know her, I've reached out to her birth mom. If she, her birth mom recently came into California, and I told her, get to know her, spend the week with her, ask her any questions you want to ask her. She has she has answers that none of us are going to have, and she did. And I've been really proud of the way that she's, We also put her in therapy to kind of work through the things that we're not qualified to work through.
Okay.
I want to remind her that she is extremely loved, and this is extremely unfortunate how life has turned out, that her birth mom isn't in her life. But that she has people that love her, and that, at the end of the day, she's going to get through it, and she just has to talk to her, because honestly, that's the only way she'll be able to heal, is asking her those questions. Yeah. Even if she doesn't get those answers, I definitely believe that the act of asking is very freeing.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. Now, with your experience and your sort of issues with abandonment and the childhood you had, you know, living with your grandparents and your uncle, how are you taking that experience into your own family? Like, what are you, you got to be sensitive to that. And like what changes are you making? Like, how are you doing it differently? Like, what, how has that impacted your own sort of nuclear unit?
So a couple of things that I do with my kids as a staple, since they were little, I've always asked them, hey, what's my job? You know, and they always say to love me and to protect me. So that's, you know, that's one of the things that I always want them to know, that that's my job and I take it seriously. I also ask them, especially because I worry, especially with my son, with his biology that comes from me with mental illness, I worry that sometimes he's going to have depression or anxiety. And even though I know there's nothing wrong with that, it's still not fun to deal with, you know?
Right. Has he shown any signs of that?
Sometimes. Not necessarily depression and anxiety, but I feel he has a lot of social anxiety. He's very introverted. And so the fact that I want to embrace the fact that it's okay to like to be alone for him. I don't want him to feel like he has to be an extrovert or social to be quote unquote normal. You know, if he wants to sit in the corner and read and that makes him happy, then hey, be happy, kid.
Yeah.
You know, but he does express a lot of anger sometimes. He has a lot of trouble honing in when he's angry. So one thing that we've really tried to enforce is we ask him, is it okay to be angry? You know, and he'll say, yeah, because of course it is. And then we tell him, is it okay to be mean because you're angry? And then he says, no. And even if it's not practiced as a child forever, that the mindset is what I'm trying to instill in them.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's good. That's good. I mean, I'm like always amazed at children and how much that's just going on around in their heads. And like, it's just,
right.
I look back at my experience as a child and I just like have so much, my heart breaks for that little guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So how are you seeing a therapist now?
Not currently. I went through therapy last year and Karen, the best therapist I've ever had one day was like,
shout out to Karen.
Yeah. She was like, hey, so I'm going to show you this picture and you're going to describe it for me because I think you're good. And she's like, you know, and if you ever need me, I'm here, but I hope you don't take offense to say, I hope you don't need me.
What's the picture?
It was a landscape. Actually, I wonder if I still have it in my restroom. I held on to it for such a long time because it was so symbolic to me. It was a picture of, there was snow, there was a line of trees, there was a ripple or a reflection in the tree. And the way that I had interpreted the landscape was the tree didn't have any leaves on it. It was just the branches. Okay. And you know, when you look at that, it doesn't look beautiful. It doesn't always look like, wow, I love the way that looks. But you know what? In the reflection, it was gorgeous. And the picture in general, the big picture, what was surrounded by it was gorgeous. Excuse me. And so my interpretation of the picture is you can choose to just look at the tree, you know, not to mention the trees behind it still had or started to have blooms to them. And so my interpretation of it, if I can remember correctly, was that you can choose to just look at the tree with branches, or you can choose to look at the big picture and the many different angles and ways that you can see that tree. And that's how everyone's going to look at me for the rest of my life. But I get to choose how I see it. I get to choose what I look at, if I get to look at like what's around it or how the potential of it growing, you know, in the far distance. And it was just, it was a very, very empowering thing to interpret a picture and how it, I connect to it personally.
Yeah. I like that a lot. It's really about perspective, right? Like, and being curious and taking a step back and looking at things, because we get, as humans, so insular at times, you know, we put blinders on, and because it's easier sometimes, and it's, you know, we operate out of fear.
Right.
But when we can operate out of curiosity and patience with ourselves, you know, we can more easily, you know, come to a situation and you know, really just kind of, oh, I notice this thing over here. Oh, I notice that. I notice I'm feeling this thing because of that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. Now, I want to talk about, like, kind of the space you're in now. Here's a big question. How do you feel less alone in the world?
Honestly, being able to talk about, you know, being an advocate online has, you know, the feedback that I've gotten from sharing my own journey and having people share their journeys with me because I'm sharing, not only makes me want to tell my story for the rest of my life, but it makes me feel good to know that there are people that have reached out to me that I would have never in a million years guessed that they struggle. Mm-hmm. And I know everyone does at some point in their lives, but you know, the courage to go out to say something like that to somebody, it takes a lot, and it means the world to me that I'm able to be that person for them. In my own personal life, being able to talk about my mental illness with my husband and knowing that my husband will acknowledge that he doesn't always understand exactly what I'm going through, but I'll come home the next day and he'll tell me, you know, I was on Reddit and I was looking up such and such thing about what you were talking about yesterday. You know, he really cares about continuing to understand me while I'm continuing to understand myself.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm really, really fortunate to have found this guy. my kids themselves, you know, I don't necessarily tell them every single thing because I feel like there's a certain line also that I don't want to overwhelm them with. But I do speak, I do let them know, you know, mom has to take pills sometimes to, I mean, and it is what it is. Sometimes I have to take pills so that I can let myself feel happy, so that I can actually feel something. And so if I'm sad or something, you know, my son, I don't understand. I've never met such an empathetic 6-year-old, but he'll say, you know, mom, when you're sad, it makes me sad. So I don't want you to be sad,
mm-hmm.
you know, and knowing that I have 3 people in this household that notice when I'm depressed or anxious, it really makes me feel like I'm not in this alone. Being able to be open myself and what that's done for me and the people around me has really made me feel great.
Is there a part of you that strives to create connected, sort of safe, you know, communities of people that are, you know, exchanging these sort of vulnerabilities because, you know, you didn't have that maybe growing up?
Definitely. You know, I get a lot of people on social media, specifically on Instagram, who will say, you know, this is how I feel. You know, my husband doesn't understand it. And I'll tell them, you know, I'm not a therapist. I know I don't know you. But even though I don't know you, I genuinely care about the well-being of people who feel like they have to struggle alone. So if at any point you feel like you need to reach out or even just send me an audio of you screaming and I can respond, I will be that person because I know exactly what it's like. I know the scariness of feeling like you don't feel anything. And I never, ever want anyone to feel like they have to go through that alone. And even if I'm not the person that they have to go to, I probably know someone that can relate a little bit to this person, you know?
Totally. And is that, so what is the, What do you do? What is the work you do?
So I blog for the most part. I've kind of been in and out of changing my blog a little bit. So that's kind of in the workshop. I just share my journey. I share my journey online, and I have a group on Facebook of people who have expressed wanting to have a safe place. And I have everyone answer specific questions before they go into Facebook to, you know, kind of make sure that everyone knows this is a safe place, you know, shaming anyone for the way they feel or trying to force your opinions or your beliefs on anyone else isn't going to be tolerated. And I just share my journey, and I encourage people to share this, and I thank them when they do, because it's scary. It's so scary to talk about how you feel. I feel like everyone that shares how they're feeling or what they're thinking has the thought, does anyone even care about what I'm saying?
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I thank them, because I genuinely do. I genuinely care to hear. I care when people are vulnerable enough, or, you know, brave enough or open enough to say, hey, I'm feeling this way, and I don't really know who I can talk to, and I feel like I can talk to this group of people. I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, no, it's the best, and it's kudos to you for creating that space for people, because we all need it.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so what's the deal with coffee? What's going on there?
I just love it so much.
Well, it may, you know, like on a sort of communal connecting level, it makes sense. You know, your coffee is sort of a thing that can bring people together.
Yeah. You know, so initially my husband has always been the Bearded Coffee. He's just naturally clever and came up with the clever name immediately. I've gone through a ton of different Instagram names. And so one day I was just like, hey, well, I'm just going to be the Beardless Coffee. Mm. but, you know, my husband and I are like coffee connoisseurs. We love coffee. And the more I started to think about the concept behind coffee, you know, I love the conversations you have over coffee. Like, sometimes I can go 2-3 cups in and be like, oh, shoot, I should stop because this is a lot of coffee. But the conversation is just so engaging, and the ideas that are coming out and the feelings that are coming out, you know, I love it. I love coffee conversations. That's the deal.
Yeah, no, I love it. And you don't have a beard, so.
Right.
That's, so it, you're making that clear.
Not yet, at least.
Wait, do you think there's room in or a future where you have, you know, in-person sort of coffee connecting, you are not alone sort of safe spaces?
Oh, I would love that. I think my end goal. So right now I'm doing, you know, exactly what I'm doing here. I talk to people on podcasts that have been kind enough to reach out to me. But I would eventually love to create a place where I can be upfront and tell people in person, hey, I'm here, you're not alone, and I'm like a real person, and I'll shake your hand, and I'll even hug you if you let me.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, that's what I want too. Eventually, I'd love to have my sort of vision for Yumi Empathy is vast, and eventually I'd love to have, you know, like pockets of Feely humans around the world, like creating, you know, sort of their own little Yumi Empathy safe communities.
Right.
It'd be amazing.
Yeah, same here. I just want to create a community that is open about who they are unapologetically, you know, and it's such a hard thing. And I feel like it sounds so simple, but it's so hard.
Yeah, we bring so much baggage, so much insecurity, so much self-hate, mm-hmm. so much confusion. Like, I think the work that needs to be done to be able to do that and to do it quote-unquote well is hard. You know, there's a lot of inward questioning and figuring it out and therapy and all that stuff. And I think even that part of the journey is very difficult.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, let's start to wrap up here. We always wrap up the show talking about empathy heroes. These are people in our lives who are just great empaths, you know, really good empathy humans. And I'll go first to give you a moment to think on it. My empathy hero this week is the writer Zora Neale Hurston. She's, you know, classic writer. I'm trying to think. Their Eyes Were Watching God, I think, is... I could be confusing authors. Terrible lit major known. anyways, I pick her because I love this particular quote that she says. She says, quote, "Some people could look at a mud puddle and see an ocean with ships." And I love that just on the level of imagination, but on, you know, what we were talking about earlier, Mel, in perspective and what we bring to experiences, you know, because we can see a mud puddle and say, like, gross, this is disgusting, why is this here? And it could upset our day, or it could just make things sour, you know. But we can also look at a mud puddle and say, oh, there's an ocean with ships, or oh, there's an opportunity for adventure, you know, jumping in puddles or what have you. Or take a step back and, oh, that mud puddle, you know, came here because it rained and we need rain, you know, and the right. Earth, the earth, mother Nene is happy, you know. So I just love that quote for its imagination and for perspective.
I love that.
Yeah. Thanks. How about you? Who's your empathy hero?
So my empathy hero, right now, the only person that can come to mind is my best friend. Her name's Trisha Garcia. And she is actually the person that taught me how to be empathetic, which is funny because now she'll tell you that she thinks I'm the most empathetic person she knows. She's the one that taught it to me. And, you know, there are times where we're just in our feelings and we'll call each other and we'll say, hey, can we just be a pile of human today together? You know, and that's what we do. We don't feel like we have to entertain each other. We're just there in silent support of each other. And I've never met anybody in the world like that. And I will always be grateful for her and how she teaches me to be able to see things from other people's perspectives. Mm.
Lovely. I love that. Good job, Trisha. Yeah, and I love that phrasing, pile of human.
Because that's what it feels like sometimes, yeah. You know?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Well, Mel, where can people connect with you? Where can they learn more about your story?
So The Beardless Coffee on Instagram, of course. TheBeardlessCoffee.com is where you can find my blog. Like I said, that one's kind of in the works, but very shortly, I'm going to be kind of spilling my entire life story on there because I've gotten so many questions recently on the exact timeline of things. So I highly recommend you go to www.thebeardlesscoffee.com. And in the meanwhile, you can follow all of my rants and very long words at The Beardless Coffee on Instagram.
Lovely. Well, those links, listeners, will be in the show notes for this episode. Mel, thank you so much for being a guest on Yumi Empathy.
Thank you so much for having me. I've had a lovely conversation.
Oh, happy to hear that. And to you listeners, I'm here, you're here. We're here together on this wayward, overwhelming, awe-inspiring pale blue dot. We have each other. It's Yumi Empathy. Oh.